This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fetrakis bringing you once again The Other Side of the News. I'm in the studios here at WCRS talking to Pete Johnson, the board president of the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, which publishes the Free Press and freepress.org. Pete has been involved actively in election protection and has worked in observing elections since 2004. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. As usual, it's an important subject to talk about.
And before we get to the specifics, we could talk about the tragic and untimely passing of legendary election protection activist Susan Truitt. I know you wrote an obituary in the Free Press, and there was, of course, at the last Free Press Second Saturday Salon, a memorial for Susan Truitt, who I know you counted as a friend, as I did.
Yeah, Susan was a great friend and worked really hard on this, was one of the first people to realize that stolen elections was a distinct possibility, if not likelihood, prior to 2004, and she was fundamental with, I think, four other people at forming a group called Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections.
Case Ohio,
prior to 2004. And, I wasn't aware that the election could possibly be stolen, or I was vaguely aware, and but after it was, I went to a rally down at the State House where Dr. Bob Fetrakis spoke along with Susan Truitt and Lynn Landis and Greg Palast, as I recall, at sometime around December 7th of 2004, as I recall. And Susan gave a compelling and great speech, and so that caused me to go to the next case meeting and Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections, and met those people, and ended up having a long going relationship with the Free Press because of that. But Susan certainly sacrificed a lot. She has said publicly that her family, her divorce, had something to do with her serious activism on election protection, and she also had a job back then that evaporated because of her political involvement. So she certainly made some sacrifices on behalf of secure elections.
Yes, she's publicly said it cost her her job and her marriage. Very devoted activist. In 2004, I had met her, I believe it was in the fall, September or October, I forget the exact date, at the State House. I had been writing articles, some of them with Harvey Wasserman, about the vulnerability of the elections and the untimely death of an Ethan Gibbs, the man that leaked the story of the Yurosevich brothers' ties, the two guys that brought us electronic voting with software, their ties to the CIA. And I had been writing articles. One of them I know was called The Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy, which directly linked this voting technology, this, cyber voting, e-voting machines, and the software to rigging elections in the third world. And I didn't know anyone was reading this stuff. You put it in the Free Press, you send it in the cyberspace, and I get a call from this group, Case Ohio, to come and speak at a rally. And that's where I met Susan Truitt in the fall of 2004, prior to the election. And she did a lot of activity involving the 04 election, particularly when it was stolen. And there's a video online. Is that video at thefreepress.org? There's a video, I think, that's linked if they go and look for Pete Johnson and Susan Truitt. And there's a video, about an 8-minute video, put together from that period where she emerged really as a national figure. And, of course, as you well know, Pete, she also was one of the four attorneys that sued in Moss v. Bush to overturn the election results in Ohio, to challenge the electoral vote, and to call for a revote, if not to declaring that Kerry was the actual winner in Ohio.
Yeah, few people know about that. Susan did testify before Congress on that. But there was a lot of lobbying that had to go on in the background because we needed one congressperson and one senator to sign off just on that challenge. And I think Barbara Boxer stepped forward and Stephanie Tubbs Jones, as I recall.
Barbara Boxer is the senator and Tubbs Jones as the representative. And the representative had to be from Ohio.
Right. So it was a big deal, and it was an uncomfortable situation for both the Kerry team and Democrats in general.
And the Kerry team was trying to concede, right?
Right.
And there was a famous Free Press cover simply saying, "We do not concede."
And Al Gore was the, as I recall, the chairperson of that committee, who also had to basically listen to the testimony and then squash it and then go on. Am I right about that? Was it out?
No, Gore was in 2000. Remember, in 2000, they couldn't get the challenge. No
right.
Senator would come forward. But in this case, and the Free Press was involved with this, there was the so-called Boxer Rebellion. People we were working with who were monitoring Ohio's computers from San Francisco actually sat in at the office of Barbara Boxer in order to encourage her to allow Stephanie Chubbs Jones to speak. Gets more interesting. The person presiding over the Senate, of course, was Dick Cheney, who had to acknowledge Barbara Boxer mm-hmm. and then allow Stephanie Tubbs Jones to speak. And very few people got to see it. I was privileged because I was with the shadow senator from Washington, D.C., Jesse Jackson. I had briefed while Susan was running around lobbying congresspeople and senators. I was briefing the leadership that was thinking of blocking it, Harry Reid and Dick Durbin, for example, and I had 10 minutes to brief them. They allowed it to go forward, but an emergency was called unexpectedly. Supposedly there was a threat on Capitol Hill. So average citizens, including my wife, Suzanne Patzer, were locked out of the building if you weren't already inside. Susan Truitt was already inside doing her part to lobby to allow this unprecedented. In the history of the United States, there's never been a challenge to an entire electoral slate. And that's what we had the privilege of working on with Susan Truitt.
Yes, and so Susan definitely was a dedicated activist. She gave lots of hours, lots of time, and lots of effort. And she was a very compelling speaker and a very compelling person to be sitting in front of a congressman and making the case. And I guess I should also say here we should mention the other three attorneys that, along with Susan, stuck their neck out. And you were one of those, Bob, and thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Pete Petarsky and
Cliff Arnebeck.
And so that was a big effort, and a lot of people made sacrifices for that. So.
And the Free Press has a book of those articles we wrote about the challenge leading up to the 2004 election, and of course a lot of the court filings where you'll see Susan Truitt's name, and that's in a book, a large yellow book, Did George W. Bush Steal the 2004 Election, which is still published by the CICJ. So if you go to the website freepress.org, to brag a little on the Free Press, that book is in virtually every major law library in America, from, you know, Harvard to Stanford and all over the world. Law students and law professors look at that challenge from the 2004 election that I had the privilege of working with Susan Truitt on, and really through her grassroots work that helped bring the challenge at Case Ohio.
And I would like to say one other thing about Susan's work and the work of the other folks at Case Ohio at that time. But after that 2004 election was stolen, Case Ohio, along with the Free Press, and I don't know exactly what that collaboration was, but put on a series of public hearings, which you can still go to YouTube and watch those. The voters coming up and talking about the long lines and the vote flipping on the screen in front of them, and various other manipulations that were going on. That's a very important historical record.
I was just reminiscing on this. Is what happened is the Free Press and a group called the League of Pissed Off Voters, which was young people, decided to call a hearing, and the key buy-in we needed, the only activist group that really had bodies at that time, was Case Ohio. Susan became the third and really key partner with the League of Pissed Off Voters. We held those hearings within walking distance here of our studios over at the New Faith Baptist Church on the east side of Columbus. And we took over 500 affidavits in terms of written form or testimony under oath. And a key component in this was, of course, Case Ohio with Susan Truitt, and of course, Phil Fry should get credit as well as one of the key organizers in that event.
Right. I think John Burke was involved then, too.
Mm-hmm.
A person named Billy Eastman, who I believe was involved. But anyway, yes. And there was more than that one public hearing, too, because I'm pretty sure
The second one was at the court. We actually scheduled, and that was standing room only as well. You know, the public line was J. Kenneth Blackwell, Secretary of State, said there wasn't a single incident of wrongdoing or irregularity, and it was all being made up. But 500 people at the church, and then a few hundred more coming down to sign statements and testify at the Franklin County board meeting. But the key thing is we ought to be fair to Jay Kenneth. There wasn't a single irregularity. We documented hundreds upon hundreds, and over the state there were literally tens of thousands, which was the point made by U.S. Representative John Conyer, the largest amount of irregularities recorded in his tenure over four decades in the U.S. House.
Right, and he produced a long report on the election irregularities based on the work of the Free Press and Case Ohio and Susan and yourself, and that certainly wouldn't have happened otherwise.
And Susan was a key component in that. Case Ohio really was a statewide coalition. It wasn't concentrated merely in Franklin County. And with the Green Party, which through David Cobb that did the recount, so you had the ability to get people in Case, many of them highly skilled, to go to different areas of the state and to Board of Elections, which is really about what you're doing this very day as we begin to transition away from this tribute to Susan Truitt, to the legacy of her work, which is election protection is still going on in Ohio and still greatly needed. This is WCRS 98.3 and 102.1. I'm speaking with Pete Johnson. We just got done reminiscing about the passing and She wasn't that old. What was her age?
Oh, I don't know if I want to guess a woman's age. Well, she was 56, born, I think, yeah.
Yeah, she was born in 1957. And again, it should be noted that she was a homecoming queen. And I believe she was from, was Kent.
She went to Kent State. Her dad
father was the basketball coach.
She was a big basketball fan and a sports fan and had three, wonderful children. And
we send our condolences to her children and to her parents that are still alive. Her daughter is 15. I remember her daughter coming to rallies and actually mm-hmm. coming to the law office in the evening when she was 5 years old and was fond of playing under the table.
Yeah.
All right. So election protection in 2014, Pete Johnson. What's the history of it? Why is it important? And why is it still going on?
Well, thanks to the Green Party being able to maintain a standing as a political party in Ohio despite the efforts
of... And that's an important point. A lot of it, even though it's fair to say that a lot of people that are doing the observation aren't Green Party members in a traditional sense. They're election rights activists, independents, progressive Dems. But the key, in part, is the Green Party being on the ballot in order to allow election observers.
Right. That gives them standing. There's one other way to do it, but it's much more difficult. But, so we have standing to assign observers. And like you say, they don't have to have voted in as a Green Party in a primary or anything like that. But the role of the observer is to go in at either the county level or the precinct level and just see what's going on. And I can tell some stories about some things in the past that have happened that observers were able to intervene in and sometimes just make a record of so that you know what happened. But just in the 2 years ago election, there were some severe irregularities driving Park Precinct. We had assigned a couple of observers that were new. They weren't that familiar with the Free Press. They weren't that familiar with, they'd gone through the training, but they hadn't done any observing. And they went in there, and there was long lines, and they were disenfranchising a lot of people by sending them to the provisional second class ballot. Young black males to have a second class ballot kind of thing. And we were able to intervene. I think you personally were able to intervene and get down there by 11 o'clock or noon and maybe even a fort challenge.
Beat the arrest by the cops who later showed up. Right. Because, I mean, you're recording stuff. And, in this case, it was brought to the attention of the judge and presiding judge at the polling place. And a lot of times the judges, Pete, you've been in trouble with a presiding judge on occasion yourself. Sometimes when you bring these things up, the people that are committing these problems and irregularities and possible illegalities often do not take kindly to an election observer pointing out that they're doing something they shouldn't do.
Yeah, my particular fun times with that was at the World Harvest Church.
Hopefully you were saved.
Where I was almost saved.
They laid hands on him.
Almost saved and sent to jail at the same time. But
like the Apostle Paul, go ahead.
They were doing the same thing, and it seemed like young black people were forced to go do a second-class provisional vote where the other... ethnicities that were coming into that poll didn't seem to be having that problem.
Those would be
primarily white people, and so I wasn't allowed to talk to people in the building, so I decided to walk outside and wait until the people exited the building to ask them what happened.
Why would that be illegal?
It wasn't illegal, but they called the police anyway. You obviously, it's illegal to interfere with somebody voting, but they had already voted, and there's a 100-foot line, where you can't politic people going in, and I guess possibly going out as well, but I was beyond the 100-foot line. They called the police, but you know, one of the one of the young women that were leaving that day said, you know, I voted here for years. I've not changed my address. I've not changed my phone number. I'm, you know, registered, and yet they sent me over to do this vote. And she was very upset about it. And those are the kind of things.
Was she black?
Yes, she was black.
Yeah, a common problem with these electronic poll books brought to us by our famed or infamous partisan friends at Triad and ESNS, where often you'll be registered as a precinct. Disproportionately, this happens to black voters, and you'll show up to vote where you voted for many years, your voting spot, and they'll tell you suddenly you're not on the election rolls. And they'll have you vote this second-class ballot, where a provisional ballot, where in the last election, 17% of them were never counted. So your chances of not having your ballot counted go up dramatically.
Right.
And you witnessed that. And how did it turn out with the police?
The police basically told me that, you know, I had two choices. I could leave, and they wouldn't arrest me, or I could stay and talk to some more voters, and they would arrest me. At that point, I think we had made the point, and the presiding judge of the precinct, I think, had possibly relaxed some of her efforts.
Targeting black voters,
right? hopefully made a difference in subsequent years, because I've gone back in subsequent years, and it's the same presiding judge, and so she knows she's being observed. So, we can't have an effect. Yes, I'm definitely going to World Harvest Church
to make sure that there's no voting by black, voting while black profiling going on at the World Harvest Church.
Might go to drive-in part
two. Have you backslidden? Do you need to be resaved at the World Harvest?
not by what's his name?
Rod Parsley.
Rod Parsley, yeah. Don't need to be saved by Rod Parsley. But, people have also observed at the county level. So, you know, you go into the Board of Elections in the evening and watch what's going on. It's not easy to see what's going on. They're often counting behind glass windows and things like that, and counting is a generic term for plugging a device into a computer and reading the total.
Often a USB, which is one of the least secure ways in the world to count something electronically. Just Google bad USBs and find out why we shouldn't be using them, Pete.
Yeah, and it's definitely true, but it's also important and useful for there to be an observer there to just record what's going on and take pictures if possible.
So when 4,000 extra votes for George Bush pop up, as it did in 2004 in Gahanna Ward 1B, someone can say, "Hey, only 638 people voted. Why'd you just give George Bush 4,000 votes?"
Right. And you can also see, you know, they bring these voting materials in. Sometimes it's like the Boy Scouts or the, you know, teenagers or various drivers and things. It just, you would think that American elections would be more secure than the way they run. Now, when you get in there in a recount situation and you actually go through the tapes and things, a lot of times everything, you know, most of those people are on the up and up, but boy, there are, you know, vulnerabilities in the system and ways to, ways to adjust the vote totals. It's just no doubt it's been proven by the Free Press and by Case back then and many books and publications, Free Press articles. But the observers, I think, is an important thing to do, and we certainly appreciate the people that have gone out in the past and people that will go out in the future to do it.
All right, I'm talking with Pete Johnson, the president of the board of the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, which publishes the Columbus Free Press and the websites freepress.org and columbusfreepress.com. Did you read the latest issue of the Free Press with the cover story on the amazing Secretary of State John Husted.
Yeah, it appears that Mr. Husted thinks it's important to get election results every 15 minutes at his office, mostly from the populated counties, which of course is places where black people vote. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I'm suspicious of the fact that by having those results coming in through the day, he would be able to easily see the trends.
Yeah, because he's running for re-election.
Exactly.
I mean, doesn't that strike you odd that a man running for re-election against Nina Turner, who I intend to vote for, even though I'm a Green, there's no Green in that race. I am casting a vote for Nina Turner because she's spoken out against voter suppression. Now, in that situation, he's running against her, and he'll be counting the votes, so to speak, as Secretary of State, but he'll have the special precinct-level data for his eyes only.
Right.
Is there a problem with that, Pete Johnson?
It would seem to me that, you know, in as a sports analogy, in NFL or Major League Baseball, that would not make fans feel very good about the chances of the fairness of the referee in the election. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it'd be like allowing the coach to be the referee.
Exactly. That's.
And I know you're a hockey fan as well as a football fan as I am, but how do you, on the one hand, stay neutral as the referee while you're running for re-election and your party is on the ballot and you're saying, hey, we want the precinct level data, this election night reporting system, and only we get to see where the votes are, how many people are voting in this precinct. Everyone else gets the overall voting results for the county, but we know exactly how many people are going to the vote, going and voting throughout the day, in case we need to get more votes out for ourselves or continue to suppress the votes in urban areas like Cleveland and Columbus.
Yeah, that's what's likely to happen. And then after the election, we'll probably have to try to use Freedom of Information or Public Records Act to try to get...
Which is what happened
that,
in
But it's
2012.
After the fact and after they've already called the election and people have lost and won.
Right.
And
John Husted refused to release the data. It took a public records request by State Rep Carney to get the data, and he posted it 1 year later on Election Day.
Yeah.
1 year later. So John Husted is keeping the data for himself from the precinct level. He's not sharing it. What he's doing is not impartial. And I have no doubt he'll use it illegally to benefit the Republican Party and his own reelection. And in a just society, people like Husted would be put in jail.
Hey, I agree with that. I know that, you know, a long time ago that they would post the precinct results at the precinct at the end of the day, and voters could go in and see how their precinct
Which
voted.
Which is part of election protection, right?
Another
we
part of election protection.
Took pictures at key precinct
right.
to make sure the ones posted at the end of the day actually match the ones reported by these computers that are often programmed by private partisan companies. 1 minute left, Pete.
Right, and that's a difficult thing to match those up to the results reported at the end of the day because of early voting and provisional voting and everything else, but it's an important thing to do. It's also that they basically said, you know, we don't have to do that because the buildings sometimes don't have windows or there's no place to post them and all kinds of excuses for making that less than transparent.
Well, the Free Press is going to be doing election protection again. Thank you, Pete Johnson. And remember, this is the other side of the news, and they can get a hold of you, can't they, if they want to work election protection?
Sure. My email is pmjohn5r@gmail.com, and they could get to me through the Free Press as well.
All right. Thank you for listening to the other side of the news.